So let's start off maybe back with the beginnings of the band. I think you have one of the most interesting stories of becoming a drummer that I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. It kind of just happened, huh?
The band was already together and you were just kind of hanging out with them?
Yeah, well, my brother is the singer and the writer and stuff, and the band was basically together and they were just rehearsing some songs. They didn't have a drummer. And the bassist had a little small drum kit at their rehearsal place in her house. And I was just hanging out, you know, partying, drinking beer, having a good time, and just listening to the tunes. I enjoyed them. And they were like, well, why don't you try to play, you know, because I was kind of dancing and have a little rhythm or whatever, maybe air drumming, I forget. But so I sat down and started to play, and they started to play, and then I kind of followed, and it just happened. It just appeared. And there we were. I think that was about 12 years ago.
And had the band recorded anything before you joined?
Justin, our singer, had recorded some stuff before with a different band when he was in high school. And they recorded like 3 or 4 records, I believe, or albums. They're pretty big in the local scene in Houston. But no Blue October, anything before Blue October became Blue October.
So how long after that kind of impromptu introduction to the band did you play your first gig with them?
Oh, God, probably 4 or 5 months. Our first few gigs, our first couple of years, and we were poopy. I'm sure we didn't sound that great. We were having fun, though, you know, and that's really what the music is all about, having fun and feeling it and just kind of letting go of everything else.
How would you say, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And that's just what, you know, that's just what we do, and that's just what it's about. So, you know, whether we sucked or not, we we were still digging it.
How would you say that the new album, Foiled, compares to some of your earlier stuff, or how is it different?
Man, every one of our records is completely different, and that's kind of one of the things that we pride ourselves on, is like an entire record not sounding, hang on, I'm by an airport. It's really loud. We don't want the whole album to kind of just sound exactly like one song, you know, so I think we started out a little bit softer, you know, back in the 96 or 97 whenever we recorded The Answers. And it was a little deeper, and maybe not a little deeper, but just a little darker type of mood, you know, kind of Cure-y and, I don't know, just kind of set a darker mood. And our mood is still kind of dark, we sing on, you know, we just touch more places musically, I think, add different instruments. Like our violinist is multi-instrumentalist guy. He plays violin, viola, mandolin, keyboard, and he also sings backup and plays some hand percussions every now and then. So we keep adding these instruments and just going for a thicker, and just, I don't know, each song just kind of explores itself when we record it, and it's kind of difficult to say how exactly they're different, you know, between each record.
When you were writing and assembling material for the new record, Foiled, did you know this would be the record that would really kind of break the band?
Well, no. You know, we never really write songs. Justin's our main writer, and he usually comes up with the songs and brings them to us, like either with a piano or an acoustic guitar or something. But we don't write songs to, like, oh, let's write a hit, you know, let's try to write the radio record hit. We know exactly which songs are going to be our singles, so let's try to write those. You know, we don't do it that way. We kind of just record songs that feel good while we're playing them and that sound interesting to us, and, you know, that have some sort of meaning to them that people can grasp, whether, you know, it's the same meaning that we think of. So, I don't know. There's another plane. Sorry. I kind of lost my train of thought.
But so when you were putting this new record together, you really didn't realize that this was the special album that would kind of take you guys over the top?
No, we really didn't. Like, recording any of our records, we you know, we were just, every record is kind of special to us, and we look forward to recording because we don't get to do it that often. I think we have an average about three years between each record, and the rest of that time is on the road. And so, you know, we really can't tell when we're recording what's the record going to do. We have a handful of wonderful fans that, you know, hopefully they will remember us from the last record 3 years ago and come back and buy the new record because, you know, they hope they like what might be on it. But it's hard to say, you know, oh, wow, we're going to go and write a smash hit record, even though, you know, it's just hard to, it's kind of like rolling the dice, I guess.
So your brother writes most of the lyrics?
Yeah, he writes most of the music, actually, too, or the main melodies of the song. You know, he'll bring a basic idea to us, and then we will, you know, kind of explore from there and kind of, you know, thicken or fill in different shades with different instruments from there. But he's the main writer. You know, see, there's a few songs on the record that, like 18-4 Balcony, CB, our guitarist, he collaborated with Justin on that one. She's My Ride Home, we all had a hand in the writing of that one with an actual different bassist on the last tour. So it kind of varies.
Is some of the dark subject matter on the new record, is that kind of based on personal experiences from your brother or people in the band?
Yeah, Justin, he's kind of one of those people who's not scared to wear his emotions and his heart kind of out on his sleeve, and that's kind of like I think some of the therapy that he gives himself by you know, putting this stuff out there and kind of being open about it and kind of being like a weight off of his shoulders on a, like when he writes a song about a certain feeling, or kind of like saying, oh, it's okay to feel this way, or it's, you know, I've been through this addiction thing or whatever, you know, it's cool, it's okay to talk about it. It's kind of just, he's very open, and you know, I personally am not that way, and I, you know, sometimes I wonder if he's putting too much out there, and you know, I will ask him, man, you know, that's pretty honest, you know, do you want to do that? And he says, yeah, man, because you know, it's just about the truth, and yeah, that's it.
How did the song Hate Me come about?
Hate Me came about, well, it's kind of, you know, it's a kind of like a song just about a person just holding themselves accountable for like a bunch of nasty stuff that, you know, they've done or didn't do, you know, and kind of giving anybody out there is kind of an open letter kind of thing, where if I screwed you over, I'm sorry, but you have every right to completely, you know, just exactly hate me for everything I've done for you, or everything that, you know, that I didn't do. And it, you know, a lot of people take it different ways, and being about different people, it could be about a girlfriend, or it could be about your mother, or, you know, just it's just kind of, and I didn't write the song, so that's kind of what it means to me, you know.
Did you know that song was going to be the single before the record was released?
We as a band thought we wanted actually something else, and when we turned the record in to the label, the main guy, Doug Morris, who's like this he's kind of like a godfather of the Universal Music group, you know, and he got our record, and he, from what we understand, he just fell in love with it, and he goes, no, Hate Me is going to be the single. You know, there's not a time out there, and this is what he said when he called us, there's not a time out there when anybody hasn't felt like this. Like you've screwed somebody over, like you feel like, you know, just like dirt at the moment. You just don't feel like you should be wanted or even liked, you know. And we were like, well, you know, you've got a point. So he kind of stressed that we go with that song, and that's why we went with that song. And, you know, if he keeps picking... wants to pick the next single, that's fine too, because he did a good job.
did that song kind of take off beyond your wildest expectations?
Yeah. Like I said, we don't like write for, you know, like a hit or anything. So when a radio station picks up our song, whether it be from the last record or, you know, from, you know, this record, we're just super ecstatic that, you know, there's another group of people that are getting to hear what we're trying to put out there, and it's exciting as hell to know that, you know, thousands or, you know, tens of thousands of people are hearing your music.
Are you on the road somewhere by an airport, or?
Yeah, we're by an airport, actually. We've been traveling, and we just pulled up to a hotel, and I'm standing outside the bus because everybody's kind of getting their stuff together. It's a little louder in there than it is here.
Has touring kind of lost its novelty now that you've been on the road so much?
Do what?
Has touring kind of lost its novelty now that you've been on the road so much?
No, you know what, man? We built our fan base by touring, and we love, you know, we go to so many cities where we see so many friendly faces. And it's great, and they bring new people every time, and it's being on stage is kind of like something that you never feel that experience anywhere else. You know, you kind of let go of everything that's bothering you or anything, and you just kind of put off this energy to the crowd, and then they give it back to you, hopefully, you know, tenfold, and it just feels great. It's you know, to us or to me, it's better than any drug you could ever do, and hopefully I'll never get too old to tour.
Do you have any really bizarre road stories you'd like to share?
When we first started out years ago, when we were in our, we did so much touring in 15 passenger vans, as a lot of up and coming bands do. And we were out on one of our first tours, and we got lost off the highway. We were going through Kentucky on a main, you know, like interstate. And somehow we got pushed off the road, like in the middle of the night. We ended up on this like 2-lane road with no shoulders and anything, in the middle of nowhere, with not knowing where we were, and it's completely pitch dark, and like the seemed like no shoulders of the road, it just dropped down straight on into these cliffs or mountains or whatever, and it was hard to tell how far it actually went. But then we're driving along going, oh, we're starting to run out of gas, and there's nothing out there. It's kind of like a backwoods, kind of a Deliverance kind of feel. And so, sorry about the plane again.
It's a busy airport.
So finally we're rolling along, and we're in the middle of nowhere. Then it's like 3 a.m. and we see these people just walking down the side of the road out in the middle of nowhere. So that freaks us out, and then we're getting lower on gas, and we come around this corner. And in the middle of nowhere, where there's these no lights or anything, there's this barn, and on the side of it, in big neon red letters, it says, Jesus Saves. And we were like kind of freaked out, and we turned around the next corner, and then the side of this hill was kind of on fire, and we still hadn't seen any like sort of life except for those two people that were walking down the road, and like no houses or anything. And finally we get to a gas station to get some gas, and it was closed. But we were off of that creepy, scary little road, and that freaked us all out. And that's just a little story.
Now, your last album, History for Sale, you released that independently in 2003, correct?
Could you say that again?
The album, History for Sale, your last release in 2003?
Yes.
You released that independently, correct, at first?
Yeah, we released it on a little independent label from Dallas called Brando Records. And they were, you know, they saw us out there touring around forever after we got dropped from Consent to Treatment. We toured for about 2.5 years on our own, just because that was how we were making fans, and that's how we were selling, you know, that's how we were living. So and they picked us up, and they're like, oh, we'd love to record a record with you guys. And they basically put us in a studio with a really great kind of indie producer named David Kestel from Dallas. And they just left us alone. They weren't like standing in there going, no, I really don't hear the hit. I really don't hear the single. You know, we need to re-record it. They just left us alone. And then that's when we recorded Calling You and History for Sale. And we put Calling You out on the radio in Dallas. The Edge picked it up. And we started selling a bunch of records. And then, you know, some labels started calling. And then we started doing some business with them, and we ultimately ended up going with Universal again.
And that's who you were with before?
That's who we were with before, yeah. And which is kind of weird because we had been dropped from them, but you know, we weren't selling any records at first. Of course, our little hearts were broken. That was our first major label deal, and our hearts were broken. But then we kind of came to realize that, you know, if you're not selling records, you know, why would they keep you around? It's kind of like if you have... Justin always says, if you owned a shoe company, you know, and you weren't selling shoes, then, you know, you'd probably get rid of the people who weren't selling shoes and hire some people who were selling shoes, or, you know, some. So it was a business move, but it turned out when we re-signed with them, there were a lot of people that were still there at Universal who loved Blue October last time, but really had their hands tied when the business guys at the top said, no, we got to cut these guys. So we didn't have to re-explain ourselves to a lot of people. They kind of understood what we were going after already from Consent to Treatment. And they embraced that, and they worked their butts off to, you know, help us get that record out, and even better on this record. They really done well, you know, trying to push our song Hate Me to radio. And they're doing a good job pushing our new single, What If We Could, to radio, too. So we're really pleased with our relationship with Universal, granted our history.
You know, I always like to spike in some deeper songs off a record, you know, when we start playing a band like Blue October. And one of the songs that really has resonated with the listeners is Drill the Wire Through My Cheek.
Oh, yeah.
Anything you can say about that one?
It resonates really well at live shows, too. When I first heard that song, when Justin first brought it to us, I wasn't real sure, you know, because it was just such a mix of ideas in one song, like real, real heavy, and then like almost kind of a sweet Motown-y kind of thing, but with some really haunting lyrics. I'm still trying to figure out what that song's about, to be honest with you.
So Justin never, like, shoved a wire through his cheek, huh?
No. He didn't, but I'm sure in a few times he's felt like that, you know, when somebody, you feel like you're hooked into something and you feel like you're being, you know, tugged in different ways, you know. Yeah, I'm glad everybody's liking that. Thank you for giving it some spikes there.
Oh, you're welcome. I think that's one of my favorite songs on the record, to be honest with you.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
Were most of these songs on Foiled newly written, or had some of the songs been with the band for a couple of years and they just ended up on the record?
There are a couple that are a few years old. You Make Me Smile was co-written with our bassist, Matt Noveski, who is with us now but wasn't with us for History for Sale, but was with us during Consent to Treatment and toured with us during Consent to Treatment. And we kind of wrote that song while we were on tour for Consent to Treatment. And then Matt left, and we always loved the song, but he was doing his own thing, and we were doing our thing, so there was kind of a mutual kind of writer's respect, like, you know, when we get back together, if we do, we'll do this song. If not, you know, we wrote it, and it's cool. We'll always have it.
Are you continuing? Are you writing new songs now while you're on the road?
We're always trying to write new songs.
Is that something you would do, like, during sound check when you're noodling around, maybe come up with an idea?
Yeah, if we have enough time, like sometimes it's really pushed and we're trying to get us sound checked and get other bands sound checked. But if we have time, you know, and we're just jamming around, we always love to just kind of jam and see what comes up. That's where a lot of our songs come from, or just the sound comes from them. It's just when we're jamming around and Justin will maybe throw some lyrics on top of it that he's maybe already had written somewhere or been thinking of in the back of his mind.
You know, one thing about the band I think that's really responsible for you resonating with so many people is that you're just so original sounding, and that's so difficult to achieve in today's day and age, and you guys are really an original band.
Thank you. We enjoy being an original band, and we appreciate that as like a huge compliment, because so much stuff just kind of sounds the same. Like I was talking about earlier, like when we record a record, you know, we don't want that record to sound the same and like just in that record, much less sound the same as everybody else's record who's out there, that's out there, you know, that's like kind of on the radio or whatever. I'm not saying any band's names, but you know, we like that, to be original. And although we have our influences, you know, like The Cure and you know, The Smiths and Morrissey and Idaho and the Red House Painters and Radiohead, you know, a lot of kind of darker bands that we don't like. I don't know. They influence us.
But well, you know, a lot of bands will find, you know, some certain element of their sound that kind of catches on with people, and that's what they'll stick to for, like, the rest of their career. It's really commendable that you guys, you know, don't do that.
Well, you know, we're always searching, and we're always kind of changing. You know, people's minds are, especially nowadays, people's minds are never stuck in one place. You know, it's kind of like, it's a growth kind of thing. You know, you mature, and you never want to just get old and not, and, stale, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I do appreciate your time. I don't want to take up too much more of your time.
Oh, thank you so much. And the planes have just now stopped, actually.
Really looking forward to the Cleveland show.
Oh, we're looking forward to Cleveland also. House of Blues are amazing. In fact, that's one of the only ones we haven't played yet.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
I appreciate your time. I do some writing for a magazine here in Canton called The Informer. So in addition to putting this on the radio, I'll also do an article on the band as well.
Oh, thanks very much. I look forward to meeting you in Cleveland.
My pleasure. Thank you again.
Take care.
Take care.